Welcome to 2017 of the Trumpocalypse. How you doing, Zara? Welcome to 2017, where the world comes to an end.
I'm hearing a lot of my new favorite question in the end of days.
Which is?
What is your self-care regimen?
Oh my God, I don't even understand how to answer that. What does that even mean?
How are you self-caring right now, Taz? Do you take baths or just bath salts?
My self-care regimen is sitting on my carpet and crying while I look at the popcorn ceiling. Is that what they mean by self-care regimen? Is that what's happening?
I think so. And like, the only thing I would add to that is that like I'm eating popcorn while looking.
Yeah.
I have gained 20 pounds of Trump weight.
I'm impressed by that, honestly. You were getting a little bit too skinny there, Zara. I'm looking for, I like my women with a little meat on them. So I'm excited about this.
Okay, you know what? My body is not for your consumption.
What have you been eating? What's been your go-to?
So I've been trading off between a wheel of Humboldt Fog and a wheel of Gouda per night.
Oh, cheese.
Cheese.
Mine's been ice cream. Like, whenever I get upset, I'm like, who's feeding me ice cream? Why isn't there ice cream in my mouth right now? Like, when that thing happened, when I got interviewed on this video project, and I got so upset with the conversation I had that I was just like, someone give me ice cream now. I need ice cream now.
What did they say? What did they tell you?
Let's just say that I was talking about how scared I was about the potential of Muslims getting sent to internment camp, and the white Republican on the panel responded with, well, you know who was responsible for that. It was the Democrats, and it was a Democratic president, and it was a Democratic Congress, and that's why it happened. I don't really care about a history lesson. All I care is that I don't get sent to a camp. I was so upset. I needed all the ice cream that day.
Yeah, I am putting on my list of Valentine's Day gifts for Taz, ice cream.
Yeah. What was your tweet about that?
Oh, yeah. Postmates. Get on that.
Let's just self-care each other by feeding each other lots and lots of sugar.
Dude, I am lactose intolerant and I have been eating ice cream.
You know how I've been self-caring? I've been spending a lot of money.
Me too. I've spent so much money.
I've just been shopping left and right, and I'm not even like paying attention. Because here's my thing is that who knows how far the dollar is going to drop in the next year. So I might as well just use it all up now, right? Who knows?
Just get stuff.
I have lots and lots of stuff.
So I'm enjoying, like, and by enjoying, I'm saying it's killing me inside that while this is all happening, big business and the NRA still win.
Yeah, of course. That's how they planned it.
Great.
Zara, you were on Fresh Air. OMG, Terry Gross knows who you are. What?
She said my name.
Holy moly.
The queen. Oh my God. I got a lot of really positive responses. The piece is called After Trump's Election, a Non-Practicing Muslim Returns to Prayer.
Sounds very Muslim-y.
Oh yeah, I got a lot of heaven points.
Oh yeah.
But then my dad made this terrible joke.
Oh no, what happened?
My dad wrote to me in text after he heard it, because he's a huge fan of Terry Gross. He wrote, LOL, now you have to give Donald Trump heaven points for making you pray again.
That's pretty funny. Your dad's pretty funny. That's pretty good.
I was like, no, I don't want to hear his name.
Well, speaking of like heaven points for Donald Trump, he had a Muslim imam pray at his inauguration day. Like what?
The response to this is truly bizarre. Like we found two articles. One is a CNN article that is like heavily focused around why when everybody is boycotting this event is this Muslim imam just like handing himself over to Trump.
Yeah.
Then there was another news outlet, who I'm purposely not naming, that highlighted that it is a mystery how this imam has ties to the Muslim Brotherhood and Barack Obama.
Yeah.
It said that in the same sentence.
So ridiculous.
It's a problem that this imam has ties to the Muslim Brotherhood and Barack Obama.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about this. Like, on one hand, I don't want any Muslims involved with the Trump administration and normalizing what it means to be Muslim in this new era. But at the same time, it's like, well, we kind of need someone there, at least for a prayer service, so that at least we're represented. I don't know. I was kind of split on this one.
I think he's just falling into the good Muslim, bad Muslim trap.
Right.
And actually, I want to read this because Sarah Benincasa pretty much summed up my feelings on this, though she wasn't writing about this inauguration event with the imam at all. She was writing just in general about the situation that we're in with Trump as president. And I'm paraphrasing her words here, but she wrote, "In an abusive situation, the abuser establishes ultimate control of reality. Facts are subject to the abuser's whim. See Trump. A kid gets hit. He tells his dad it hurts. The dad says, no, it didn't. This is repeated as fact. The kid learns to agree to survive. Another kid gets very loud about getting hit. He is repeatedly punished. Kid one is rewarded lavishly. He colludes with dad to shame kid number two. The world of the abuser becomes your normal. Your loyalty to the abuser is sacrosanct." Like, this is, I mean, in a nutshell, it's going to be those who are siding with Trump. He keeps repeating the term loyalty. His constituents keep repeating the term of loyalty. Those who are loyal to Trump will see the benefits of that. I can see this imam thinking that if he can win over Trump somehow, he's going to reap the benefits of that for himself and his constituents. And then everyone else who is on the side of the resistance, who isn't quote unquote working with authorities and resisting, are the bad guys. They're making it difficult for everybody else.
Yeah.
It's a classic situation of abuse.
It's a classic good Muslim, bad Muslim. It's a classic good, bad dichotomy.
Exactly.
A very important reason why our podcast exists.
Which also is like, everywhere around us, can we talk about Shepherd Fairey's flag hijab?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, we have to talk about this. Okay, I actually have a story about this flag hijab. So this image is an image of a photograph by Ridwan Adami. He took this photograph in 2006 of a Bangladeshi girl wearing a flag hijab. And when this inauguration was happening, Shepherd Fairey always does these images for inauguration. He chose three images. Two of the other images were of women of color and created by women of color. This one was taking this photograph and turned into a Shepherd Fairey design. So on inauguration day, they actually bought full page ads in the New York Times and in other big press. I saw it in the New York Times. So I knew that this was in the New York Times. And that morning, I was actually at Starbucks. I was trying to write on inauguration day, trying to avoid following the media around the inauguration. And over my shoulder, I heard this uncle speaking in Hindi on the phone, talking about how very, very good the speech was this morning. Like, did you hear the speech? It was very good, very beautiful. I was like, oh my God. And like, my understanding of Hindi is very much like what I watch in Bollywood movies. I was raised on Bangla. I wasn't raised on Hindi. And then he would kept peppering the conversation with like English words, like very good, very nice, welfare and immigration and so good. And I was just like, holy crap. This is like a Desi Hindi uncle, Hindi speaking uncle, who is literally on inauguration day talking about in Hindi about how great Trump was. And I was like, I have to do something. And I was like live tweeting the experience because I was so blown away that I was experiencing this in Los Angeles, so close to Little Bangladesh, right around the corner from one of the biggest mosques in LA. So I went and bought the New York Times article. I ripped out the page of the woman wearing the American flag hijab, and I got a Sharpie and I wrote "fuck Trump" on top of her. And then I folded up the page and I handed it to the uncle and I was like, "This is for you." And then I walked away, and he was like, kind of like shaky because he was a really old man too. And he's like, oh, thank you. And then as I walked away, I saw him slowly open it up and just like read the page. And then I like walked out of Starbucks. And that's my story. That was my act of resistance day one. And I've now since committed to do 100 acts of resistance over the course of 100 days.
Oh, that's awesome. Is this like a thing like that people are doing, 100 acts of activism over 100 days?
It's a thing that we should be doing. I mean, there's definitely, people are talking about 100 days of resistance. The first 100 days of any presidency is always, you know, that's when a lot of decisions are getting made. The president is trying to set agenda. So that's definitely common. I haven't heard of many people saying they're committing to 100 acts of resistance over 100 days. There's just a lot of things that are happening in 100 days. But if you're with me, commit to 100 acts of resistance over the next 100 days. I think it's a fun thing to do, fun list to make. Zara, are you with me?
I am totally with you. At the same time as I check my ability to get out of this country quickly.
Self-care. Hashtag self-care.
Hashtag self-care. Hashtag ice cream. Hashtag popcorn. Hashtag Gouda. Okay, so speaking of resistance, though, and like how that happens, like this is really confusing terrain because this flag hijab thing, all right? Like when you first wrote that on our agenda today, I was like, I am totally pro this poster. We need it just because like we have this relationship with it that it's like complex and we want to talk about how problematic it is. It doesn't mean that it doesn't help women, you know, in the middle of nowhere surrounded by Trump goons that like could really use the support.
Yeah.
Then I talked to our good friend Sabiha Basrai at Design Action Collective, and she informed me that it's a little bit more complicated than even just the conversation of flag hijab.
Yeah.
Shepard Fairey is a white male artist who has constantly gotten credit for brown and black people's work and the work of grassroots movements.
Yeah.
And now I'm totally annoyed and I hate the poster.
Yeah, I'm conflicted because I think in the moment, like being able to rip out the poster and give it to this uncle was really empowering. It was great to see so many white women at the Women's March in Los Angeles holding the sign. But at the same time, you know, knowing that the other two images were created by women of color artists, like what, we couldn't find a Muslim woman of color artist to work on this, like on a design that represents the Muslim community, that I thought was really problematic. Just, I don't know. I'm very conflicted.
Or that we couldn't just use, you know, ask Ridwan to create an illustrative version of the same poster. I don't know. The fact that, like, now we have a CNN article that is like, Shepard Fairey is defining political art. It's like, wait a minute.
Yeah. And I just don't like it because I think it's dated. Like, the image that Ridwan initially created was in 2006, which was 5 years after September 11th. And yeah, like, that was a different time. We're like 15 years after that, 16 years. And it's just kind of like, come on, like, you haven't been creative enough to come up with any other iconography or artistic production that isn't flag and hijab. Like, it's tired. It's boring. Get over it. Let's be creative and forward thinking.
Here's the other thing is that, like, while the movement was happening, the march was happening in protest to the inauguration, there were women wearing flag hijab who were pinning flags around the heads of protesters, men and women.
There's a great video of it on the internet that we'll share on our site.
The video that I saw was uploaded by at Maya Ergas, E-R-G-A-S. And there's this one of a guy who is having it pinned to him and he looks at the camera and he goes, flag hijab. And I kind of want to marry him now.
Well, like, what did that moment represent to you when he laughed like that?
But like, I could be projecting all of this onto you, this guy in this video, but I felt like that was like, hey, I'm here protesting a march as a man supporting women, but it's not just about white women. It's women of color, because white women, you kind of betrayed us, all of us, actually, and I'm wearing hijab. It's flag hijab. This is not my religion, and I'm just wearing it, but these women are giving it to me who are wearing hijab, not to tokenize them, but I'm going to wear it, and I'm protesting, and...
Yeah, basically.
It's just all summed up in his, oh, flag hijab.
Yeah.
March, 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 march.
Did you go to the march?
No, I did not. I was at events every single day leading up to the march, and so I took some time to sit with other women of color and talk about theater. My friend Lisa Marie Rollins, my director, my sister, my heart, she, me, Echo Brown, Safia Fredericks, we all got together. We're all solo performers in the Bay Area. They have phenomenal work that you need to go see, and we had time with ourselves.
That's awesome. So you self-cared.
Is it like there's a part of me that sort of also felt like the women's march with the pink pussy hats was like also an opportunity for white women to atone for their sins?
I don't know. Okay, so I went to the march in LA, and I went with, we were trying to do a brown contingent, but it was really hard to do a brown contingent, A, because all my brown people were late because they're brown, And then B, it got packed so fast that it was really hard to get through the crowd. And I've just been reflecting a lot on how Los Angeles and Oakland too have different relationships with marches and protests than a lot of other places I've been. And in LA, if anything happens, like, people descend. And I couldn't tell because we were in the middle of it, but it was just really tough to walk anywhere. It was tough to get through the crowds. And then, like, a few hours later, they were projecting 750,000 people turned out, which is the population of San Francisco. And it was amazing. It was so impressive. And it was, for what I saw, there was a lot of people of color. But I think that's because you're in Los Angeles. You can't really avoid people of color in this city. I think what I was hearing a lot was how the Women's March was all about white women. But I think in a city like Los Angeles, and there were so many people that turned out, that it was like everybody was there. It was amazing to be a part of. It was amazing to see. I really wish we could have done a contingent, but it was incredible. It made me proud to be an Angeleno because this is what we do, and it felt good.
It's nice to hear stories like that because I also at the same time was getting friends of mine posting on my Facebook wall that they held up signs saying, you know, remember that white women elected Trump.
Yeah.
And then reporting that they were being screamed at by other so-called liberal white women who were supposedly there to be there, like in this intersectional movement, supposedly.
I was holding a sign that I made of Yuri Kochiyama, and the sign said, destroy white supremacy. So I think all the white people avoided me because of that. I was very clear about where I stood with white people, and I didn't have any problems with the white folks because of that. That's my suggestions. Next time you're in a protest, destroy white supremacy. It works. It was amazing.
Nice.
Yeah.
Feminists need to get on board with intersectional feminism and understand what that means and understand what that's about and understand why it works.
Yeah.
Because we don't have time. We don't have time. Hurry up.
Yeah, totally hurry up.
Read the article. Let's go. There's a lot to do.
So much to do. So, okay, speaking of so much to do, we are in a crucial day here. We are recording on January 25th. The executive order of the Muslim ban and Muslim registry should be out either later today or on the 26th. And it's here. Muslim ban's here. We said it was going to happen. It's here.
So should we read through what it means that it's here? Because I have a lot of friends saying you don't need to worry. Because this isn't the registry. Yeah. All right. When I read these points within the Muslim ban, it just got grosser and then really terrifying. It says that it is advised that students from the listed countries not leave the United States because they're not going to be permitted back in. We don't know what happens to visa holders from the countries listed: Syria, Yemen, Somalia, Sudan, Iraq, and Iran, my home country. They won't be permitted back in. And we don't know what's going to happen to those citizens who are holding visas that are currently in the United States. And, okay, the ban also extends to spouses of U.S. citizens who are from one of the listed countries and have pending applications. Mm-hmm. The EO will call for what's known as a values test. The executive order is asking for a values test. Here are the questions. Do you support Sharia law? Do you believe in beheadings?
Oh, my God, that's so stupid.
What is your view on homosexuality?
What are Republicans' views on homosexuality?
Yeah, like, is Mike Pence providing a cheat sheet for people on how they're supposed to navigate that question in the moment that they may or may not be deported from the country?
I think one of the things that I want to highlight on this topic is that I think people were thinking, you know, when people were like, oh, I'm going to stand by you with the Muslim ban or the Muslim registry. Like, this is how it is. It's not going to be like we have an Excel spreadsheet of all the names. Like, this is literally how it's manifesting in modern times. This is the modern day version of a Muslim registry. And I think people need to recognize that this is what we are fighting against. But the other thing I also do want to recognize is that executive orders are just things that presidents say. It takes a lot to move forward on how to back them, such as legislation, and Congress can refuse to appropriate money to carry them out. So we do have a lot of leeway, I guess. So basically, I just don't want to have this idea that we should be in a super fear-ridden world. There's a lot to organize still, but we definitely need to organize this. And I don't want people to panic, but but.
I'm with you on that. I have this like fear that if people aren't feeling the sense of alarm, then they just kind of rest on their laurels and don't understand that if they don't pick up the phone and call their congressman every single day and their representatives every single day, like, where's the resistance? Then there's no resistance. Like, it takes, to quote Aziz Ansari, who we'll be talking about more in this segment, large groups of angry people have to stay large and angry.
Yeah, absolutely.
But also take calming baths in between. All right, it's fatwa time.
What's your fatwa this time?
Nicotine.
Hold up. You smoke?
No, I do not smoke. I did.
What?
In college. What? I know, because that's what happens when you date a DJ and you start doing bad things that your parents told you not to do and your doctor told you not to do and the whole world told you not to do.
I mean, my parents told me that I would get pregnant if I ever hugged a boy, so I don't really know how much that works.
I don't know, Taz. I think probably it's risky. We don't know if we're going to have any access to any kind of birth control whatsoever. So maybe just, like, so you
just,
know.
Just, you know, be okay with that.
Jesus. Yeah. Okay. So, like, I can't believe that I quit more than a decade ago. I didn't even smoke for that long. I didn't even smoke that much. But
I'm just really stunned that you were a smoker at all.
Dude, I was like a club hopping, smoking, drinking.
Mm-s.
That's right. And like, I can feel myself reach for like what they call a smoker's breath, where you like put your two fingers together just to like imagine it. So you take that like deep calming breath. And I'm just like, dude, nicotine is so damn powerful. I want to fatwa you.
That's a good fatwa. I'm down for that.
And I hate that like people with e-cigarettes are like, oh, it's just an e-cigarette. It only has nicotine. I'm like, dude, I'm pretty sure that's what got me the first time.
So stupid.
What's your fatwa?
I fatwa bacon again. I'm so all about this bacon lobby. A mosque in Davis, California was attacked this past week.
Oh, that's not funny.
Windows were broken. And on the door handle of the mosque, they had pieces of raw bacon on it. And the news show that I heard said that it was a hate crime, not because it was a religious institution that was attacked, but because there was bacon. And it's just kind of like, well, did the bacon make it a hate crime? It's a religious institution that was attacked. That should make it a hate crime. And I just think that it's really stupid and silly and ridiculous that, you know, people think that bacon is Muslim kryptonite and that, like, we'll see it and then we'll, like, scream with horror and run and, you know, like, our heads are going to explode. But, you know, we have to go to the grocery store, too, and we have to walk by the meat aisle where there's raw bacon all the time.
Yeah.
It's not like Muslims are dying in the meat section of the grocery store.
You know, actually, I think you're touching on a point that's, like, it's really important. I find it really sinister that that conversation would be about the bacon, like you said, and not that it's an attack on a religious institution, because it almost purposefully makes Muslims sound silly.
Yeah, when really it's the people putting raw bacon on the door handle who are the silly ones.
Yeah, exactly. Ugh, that's gross.
I think the bacon lobby is behind this. That is my theory. So fatwa on people who put bacon on door handles. Because it's stupid. Come on.
Oh, God. I cry intermittently. That's also part of my self-care regimen.
So, Creeping Sharia, do you have any?
You mean apart from the fact that Creeping Sharia is actually happening and I'm terrified because where the fuck is my birth control going to come from? Thanks a lot, Paul Ryan. Like, I thought that Creeping Sharia was supposed to be something that, like, comedians joked about on podcasts and not actually embraced by the GOP.
Yeah, what happened? What is this dystopian society that we live in?
But I'm glad that in the meantime, we have Lindsay Lohan.
Why?
For real this time. Like, forever I've been joking that, like, there's no PR like Muslim PR.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We have the best PR.
Yeah. And that Lindsay Lohan wishes she was Muslim. And we've joked about this a lot.
Yeah. This is a topic we've talked about.
But now we have to embrace her as Sister Lohan. I don't know what her new Muslim name is going to be, but she has deleted all of her Instagram photos.
Layla Lohan.
Oh, I like Layla Lohan.
Layla Lohan. Lindsay Lohan. We talked about her before because she was spotted carrying a Quran on her way to community service, right? There is an image of Lindsay Lohan on the internet wearing hijab, and then she, like, deleted all of her Instagram photos and then replaced her bio with Assalamu alaikum, and everyone's, like, tripping. And, you know, she hasn't actually said she converted to Islam, but, yo, parent trap is Lindsay Lohan Muslim now.
Is it Freaky Friday or Freaky Jum'ah?
Muslim Mean Girls. What other Lindsay Lohan movies are there?
Yeah, I'm really liking this, actually.
Can I tell you my creeping Sharia?
Yes, please, because I'm very excited about yours.
My Muslim Valentine's Day cards are back. Very excited.
Thank God, because I need a laugh.
I'm going to creep Muslimness all into your love life. That was supposed to be dirtier than it came out, but I hope your imagination worked on that.
I think you should say it again, like, in more, like, sultry.
I'm going to creep Muslimness all into your love life. So for people who don't know, for the past few years, I've been doing these Muslim Valentine's Day cards. This is the fifth in the series. Last year, I thought I retired it. I was like, I'm over this. I'm growing up. I should be an adult. Who needs dirty, suggestive, political cards? And then, you know, the elections happened, and I was like, I got to bring this back. So this year, the set is 7. I'm going to read them all in my pseudo-sexy voice, which I don't actually have. Let's engage in some heavy vetting. I'm ready for the camps because you're so good at pitching my tent. Wahab be mine. Let unprecedented be our safe word. First Muslim registry, then wedding registry. I'm on the front lines of loving you. Are you Russian? Because you've hacked into my heart. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Woo. Woo.
All right, comments.
Just feeling a little warm and juicy.
So if you enjoyed those cards, you can get them on my Etsy site. Just go to Etsy, search for hashtag Muslim V-Day. It should be Tazzy Star Shop. If you can also search that too. And it'll be all over social media the closer we get to Valentine's Day. Just use the hashtag Muslim V-Day. So has anything been awkward for you lately?
Oh, you mean like when one of my millionaire friends showed me his new hobby drum?
Is your millionaire friend single and...
So, okay, in San Francisco, it's very easy to find millionaire friends. There are a lot of .com millionaires, chances are.
Yeah, I don't have any.
If your friend lives in San Francisco still.
Yeah, that's true.
So this buddy of mine loves collecting gadgets. His latest is called the DJI Mavic. And it's a really cool drone that is like
what?
Super HD camera that can fly up high where your friends can't see it in case you just want a drone that follows you around or other people. Or guess what? You can also tap on its screen so that it can follow a vehicle or an animal or a group of people.
It automatically follows you or whatever you want without a bracelet or tracker. Shooting an epic tracking shot of a friend is easy. Active Track technology means it just takes a few taps. DJI Mavic, wherever you go.
So how did this come up in conversation? Like, what was the awkward thing about it?
He said, oh, check out this. And I looked at it and I was terrified. And he goes, I know. And I was like, yeah, that feels like a future murder drone. And he was like, I know. And I was like, yeah. And that's it.
So you didn't come to any, like, conclusion together. You were just, like, scary, scary. Like, you both were on, like, two different tangents of, like, how you felt about this.
We're just living in an age where the very thing that is, like, a small convenience or is, like, a cool toy is also can potentially be used in the new fascist era to collect people.
Oh, yeah.
To kill people.
Yeah. I think what really, like, surprises me is that we've been using drones to bomb people in the Middle East. And here we are using drones domestically to spy on each other. And it's definitely two different uses. But at the same time, it's the same. It's just, ugh, so scary.
You guys should go check out the video for DJI Mavic. To be fair to them, it's really just for beautiful scenes and sights.
Zara and I are going to have our own drones.
Yeah, I'm going to think about who I want mine to follow.
My awkward ask a Muslim actually happened at a Bollywood party, which in itself is a little problematic. It was a party that was being thrown by a friend of ours and her coworker. So I had to be nice because this was a party for all of her coworkers. And
Already awkward.
It's very hard for me to be polite with strangers generally. So it was basically like we were eating Indian food and we were going to watch Bollywood movies all night. And it was kind of like supposed to be like this fun, casual thing. And I was like, okay, I can do fun, casual with strangers. And it wasn't like I was dealing with a bunch of white people either. It was like all different kinds of people of color. Anyway, so I'm sitting down actually with that friend Sabiha and we're like sitting down eating samosas. And then this woman sitting in front of us turns around and says, oh, so can you explain how Wahhabism has spread in the Muslim world? And I looked at her and I was like, wait, can you ask, what was that? Like, you know, I was trying to give her an out. And she's like, well, I'm just really curious about how, you know, Wahhabism has spread in the Muslim world and what your thoughts are on that. And I was like, why is this samosa conversation? This is not samosa Bollywood movie conversation. Just because I'm a Muslim doesn't mean that I need to know the history and political landscape of how Wahhabism has spread in the Muslim world. Like, fine, I can like attempt to answer it, but really, like, I write about domestic politics. Like, don't just turn to Muslim people and ask these stupid questions. So awkward. I was so upset.
Taz, you didn't have your Muslim world encyclopedia on hand to just whip it out and answer?
I apparently didn't. The most problematic thing about that was it was the first thing out of her mouth. Like, it wasn't like leading up to it. It was like, that was it. I'm just like, what? Then I was like, this, I'm putting this on the podcast.
I think that's also a good moment to whip out another Shepherd Fairy flag hijab ad, write fuck Trump on it, fold it up and hand it to the person.
I know. I'm trying to think of if I should create some sort of a postcard that was like, you're inappropriate. Just being able to slide it to people. That is dumb.
Because like now I'm realizing, not to open up this conversation again, but basically like that image is birthed out of a Trump America. Anyway,
I keep going back to the Republican woman that was on Fox News wearing the flag hijab.
Oh, yeah.
And that was just last year. And so, like, if we're like distributing this other image saying that, oh, this is a radical American expression, but really, like, a Trump speaker was on Fox News wearing a flag hijab, where's the radicalness in that?
You know how I know about this? Because of my like fourth awkward ask a Muslim of the evening. When that poster came out, everyone thought it was a great time to unearth my satirical flag hijab photos from 2011.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, great, great. Thanks a lot. Facepalm, FML. It's time for a good Muslim award. I don't get one, but who are you giving one to?
I'm giving mine to Linda Sarsour because she is amazing. She was one of the main organizers of the Women's March. And after the Women's March on Saturday, she was the target of a vicious right-wing attack. People were saying stuff on conservative blogs such as Linda Sarsour is pro-Sharia law with ties to Hamas, the anti-Semite who organized the Women's March in Washington, the Muslim veil, not pink pussy cap, was the real symbol behind the big Women's March. It's just vicious and terrible. And I was in a Facebook conversation where someone was saying because she held up one finger to the sky, it means she had ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. And I was like, this is ridiculous, the kind of rumors that are being spread around about this beautiful, amazing woman who is such a powerhouse. I'm so proud of her. There's a hashtag that went out that said, I march with Linda to stand in solidarity with her. I sent it out. I march with Linda. I will do whatever Linda tells me to do because she is amazing. I'll stand by her till the end of this resistance.
This is a tactic and a strategy. They did the same thing to Keith Ellison and are continuing to do it. And we need to hold both of them really, really, really close.
Hold her high. She's amazing. Who's your good Muslim award to?
Aziz Ansari.
Oh my gosh, so good.
On SNL, the day after inauguration. What?
Hey, that was a good Aziz impression. Good job.
That was pretty good, right?
Yeah.
What? Okay, Aziz Ansari gets props because A, he does not self-identify as Muslim. People keep wanting to put him in that category. Yep. And he firmly says, no, I am not Muslim. Islam is not a race. You don't just get to call people Muslim because they look Muslim to you.
That being said, he was raised as a Muslim by Muslim parents.
And I have decided that he's Muslim and I'm giving him a good Muslim award.
I think it works. In our idea of identity politics, I think he falls in. I think what was the best thing about this was that He was on SNL the day after inauguration. You know that motherfucking Trump watches SNL and is constantly tweeting about it. So you know he watched that shit. And Aziz took that opportunity to talk about Islamophobia, which I was thinking about it. And I don't think SNL's really ever talked about Islamophobia, especially the way Aziz talked about it. So he just really, he was super brave. He took the opportunity and made it a political moment. I'm super proud of that. I think he did fantastic.
Agreed.
I watched it 3 times.
Me too.
I'm probably going to watch it like 3 more times.
my dad keeps like replaying it too.
Yeah. It was so powerful. Aziz, get on the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast. We want you.
All right. It's time to say goodnight or good morning, depending on when you're hearing this.
So long. Farewell.
Oh, why that one?
Because of the Nazi reference, right?
Right. No? Right. Okay. Discuss safety strategies and exit strategies with your family. These are scary times.
Yes.
I'm not joking.
Do that. Yeah. Definitely figure out how you're keeping safe. Figure out your 100 days of resistance tactics.
Yes. Get a Muslim V-Day card. They're amazing. Taz painted them.
Get on Signal.
And listen to my piece on Fresh Air.
And that's it. Be safe out there. It's going to be an interesting 2017, and we're glad to be here with you. And thank you for everyone that's given us donations. We've been sending out thank you postcards. So if you have donated, you are receiving thank you postcards. So thank you. Thank you so much. If you haven't donated yet, please do. You can check it out on our site.
We've had amazing people sharing their postcards that we sent them. And I just wanted to say, you guys are awesome, and it means a lot.
You're so awesome. We love you.
You keep us lit.
See you next month.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast, hosted by Taz Ahmed and Zara Nourbash. You can follow Taz on Twitter at TazzyStar. That's TAZZYSTAR. And Zara at Zara Comedy. That's ZAHRA Comedy. The show is produced and edited by Quincy Sarasmith, and you can find us on the web at goodmuslimbadmuslim.com. To follow the conversation, please use the hashtag GoodMuslimBadMuslim. Good Muslim, Bad Muslim is a proud member of Potluck, a collective that features stories and voices from the Asian American community.
Holy
Potluck.
Potluck.
I mean, my parents told me that I would get pregnant if I ever hugged a boy, so...